Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Monday, August the 28th, 2023. Last Monday in the month of August. How about that? Next Monday will be Labor Day. 16 and a half minutes past the hour, and we have got a great two-hour program for you this morning that you are not going to want to miss. Now, something I have to do real quick right off the top of the program here. As many of you know, legendary broadcaster, game show host, actor, Bob Barker passed away on Saturday at the age of 99. Now, Bob had been on the show many, many times over the years, over the course of many different radio stations that I had been on. He had been on this station twice, I believe, with me. His last appearance was in 2017. And we are going to remember Bob tomorrow on this program with a few clips of his appearances on this program. And I just want to tell the story very quickly that the last time Bob was on, I'll tell you what kind of a good guy he was. He came on to do a 45-minute interview, and Bob is in his 90s back in 2017, and for some reason during the interview, we got about 30 minutes in, and he could no longer hear me on the telephone. For whatever reason it was, I could hear him, he couldn't hear me. So when the interview was over, it was live, there's nothing you can do about it when it's live. When it was over, he called me back and he said, "I'm so sorry about that." He said, "I think something was going on with the phone lines out here. I'm going to come back and give you the balance of the interview." And 2 weeks later, he came back and we did another 30 minutes. So Bob Barker was a good guy. You can't say anything bad about 99 and a half years old. He would have turned 100 in December. So I know a lot of people said about the death of Bob Barker, who came into your home for 35 years on The Price is Right. But we'll pay homage to Bob tomorrow morning. So stay tuned for that. Now today, we turn local, but really not so much local, and we're going to talk about that this morning during the course of the program. If you got the Marion Star last week, or many other publications on the internet, including Yahoo News, which I was looking at this morning, and other newspapers across the area, you read the story of a country artist who performed a song off of his CD and recorded a music video at the Shovel City Drinkery here in Marion. The song was One Fifth at a Time. Now, this is a cut off of a CD, a song off of a CD, that was released last November, and on Spotify, on the internet, has gotten 3.3 million streams. Now, that's million with an M, 3.3 million. How about that? So we are so lucky for the two-hour program this morning to have the performer, star of this CD, Chad Clark, in studio with us this morning, learn about his background, and have some live music in the studio. What fun it's going to be, and it's great to welcome to these microphones this morning, Chad Clark. Chad, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
Chad, the story came out last week, started with the Marion Star, went to other publications on the internet. We were talking this morning about it being in the Bucyrus paper. What's that like?
Total shock and surprise. You know, I'm just a local guy and never expected all this national exposure that I'm getting.
What's it like to see yourself in print, see pictures?
This isn't the first time that I've been on the front page of the Star. You know, I've played in town for almost 40 years. I hate to say that, but I was a teenager when I started, so it's a good feeling because I put a lot of effort into this. So to get recognition is always cool.
To do something with newspaper, they interview you, or they are there, and they kind of pick and choose what they use.
Right.
Did you like the final product of the story when it came out?
Yes, I thought it was pretty accurate.
When your friends, your family, people see this, what's their reaction?
they're proud of me. You know, they've followed me, they've supported me over the years, so they're glad to see me getting some recognition.
Now, how was it chosen that Shovel City Drinkery would be the place that you would do this video?
I wanted to do something in my hometown. I wanted something that fit the song, you know, a location, and I just thought that that location kind of fit the song. It's about He's Losing Her by Fractions, One Fifth at a Time. That's a tagline out of the song. So I thought a bar would be a perfect scenario, and that way I could have some of my fans, you know, involved in it too.
Now, how do you decide what happens in the video, what the video is going to be about?
Well, I kind of followed along with the song, you know. It wasn't just me. I had a director, too. He had a lot of suggestions. And I have seen a rough cut of it, Scott, and it's really impressive, to be honest with you. It looks like a real video.
Oh, it absolutely does. The video itself, is that exciting? Is it more exciting than just hearing the song alone?
You know, it was a strange experience for me doing the video. I'm not really accustomed to doing videos. This was really my first time starring in a video where the song was one that I had written. But after seeing the rough cut, and the final edit is not out yet, but after seeing the rough cut, I'm pretty proud of the way it turned out.
How does a video come about? Do you have to approach somebody? Do they approach you? How does this happen?
Yeah, I actually was reaching out to videographers and selected Bruce McPherson. He's kind of from the Central Ohio area here. He's got a pretty good resume of doing these type of videos. So I'd never worked with him before, but like I said, after seeing the rough cut, I think that I made a good choice on my director videographer.
Much like radio, in a way, when you're doing something audio with your voice, it doesn't really matter how you look. People aren't seeing you, facial expressions, clothes you wear. Different in a video.
Way different.
Way different. What's that like?
Well, you know, I don't have any acting experience, and you got to act. You got to be an actor to do this. So, I once again, kudos out to my director, Bruce McPherson. Kudos out to my co-star, Jacqueline Chevalier. She was great, and that helped me act because she was performing, he was coaching us, so it helped me do what I needed to do in it.
Now, how was the video cast in that way, your co-star?
She was recommended to me by a third party, and I never met her until that day, believe it or not, and we just looked like we've been longtime boyfriend and girlfriend in the video. She was awesome. Her boyfriend was there, and she had a lot of support people there for her. So all I can say is that I'm glad that she was in it because she helped me act better. So
now, is she from?
She's from the Marion area.
Oh, she's from the Marion area. I did not realize that.
She is from the Marion area also.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Now, in a video like that, where you have to, much like movies, where you have to play a long time relationship, I guess is what we would say. Is that hard in a way? Her boyfriend's there. It's a video, but you've got to pretend that you guys have been in a long-term relationship.
It was awkward.
Yes, awkward is the word.
I just met her that day. Yeah. You know, so it was a little awkward, but she was great. It put me at ease. It allowed me to do some acting, you know, that I'm not comfortable doing. So seeing her act, you know, allowed me to open up a little bit. So it was all good.
Now, what was her feedback when the video was over?
She enjoyed it. She had fun doing it, yeah. It was an enjoyable experience for everybody, I think. Even the people in the background scenes thought it was fun to see how it's done. And I think they got sick of hearing my song 37 times because it's cut after cut after cut. You know, you do like 3 hours of shooting for a 4.5 minute song. So,
well, that process is interesting as well. How is that done for people who've never seen a music video done? How do you get it to the final stage when you're there producing it. Takes a while.
It takes a while, and things are shot out of sequence. So it doesn't make a lot of sense when you're actually observing things. The magic's all done in the editing, in the editing room. It's all put together and becomes a final product.
Did the people in the background know this was going to be going on that day?
Absolutely. I want to do a shout out to Derek and Andrea Mullins, the owners of the establishment. That was their night off. So they opened it up for me, and only people that we invited were there to participate. So everybody there knew what was going on. They knew that it wasn't just a normal night at this establishment, that it was a video set. It was a sound stage for that one night. So everybody knew that they had to not walk when he told you not to walk, don't cut in front of the camera, stuff like that.
In the world we live in today, the internet world, do you have to have videos, even if you're music-oriented?
I think so. I think in this world that, you know, things have changed tremendously in the music industry. I don't think that 5 years ago I could have had 3.3 million people listen to the music that I have written without moving to Los Angeles, New York, or Nashville, Tennessee. That was the hubs of the music industry, and now you can be anywhere and do this, so it's kind of amazing. But yeah, a video does enhance that whole package.
Are the financials of doing a video doable, affordable?
Yes.
That's good.
It's still expensive, don't get me wrong. Right. I spend a lot of money because I don't have a record label, you know, paying for this. I'm doing this as an independent artist. And it's still expensive, but it's doable.
Now, why was this the song you chose to do the video for?
I was just looking for a song off of the album that I could include people that support me around town. I wanted local people to be in the background, so I thought this song talks about, you know, losing her by fractions, one-fifth at a time. We could shoot that in a bar. We could have a lot of extras in the background, so everybody in it has been longtime supporters of mine.
Now, not being signed by a record label, how do you produce and get your music out there in 2023?
Well, it's not as hard as one might think. I do have a distributor. That's one thing you got to do. You got to sign up with a distributing company, and that company basically takes my original works and puts it out to all the outlets. You know, your YouTubes, your Spotify's, your Apple Music, your iTunes, which are, I found out, separate entities. Even though Apple owns both of them, those are separate things. And that's how you get your music out there on all those platforms.
Now, do you write your own music?
Yes.
Tell me about the writing process.
My writing process is kind of strange because I can't just say, hey, tonight I'm going to sit down and write a song. It has to be the right mood, the right vibe, and sometimes I can write one in a half an hour.
Really?
Yeah. And then, of course, after I write it in a half an hour, I go back and tweak it a little bit here and there and fine-tune it. But sometimes they just happen.
Do lyrics come, or does the music come?
For me, it's a process where I kind of do it simultaneously. I sit down on the couch with a guitar, and I kind of play the melody, and I fit the words to the melody at the same time.
Now, would you say the majority...
There's other processes. Everybody's got their own process, but that's my process.
Would you say the majority of your songs are upbeat or slower songs?
I would say on this CD, they are more slow ballad-type songs, but I do have upbeat songs also, but not on this particular CD. This was my first release as a solo artist. I've been in bands over the years. People's coming out and seeing me, and they're like, hey, I know you. Yeah. But they don't know the name Chad Clark because I was in other bands.
How many songs have you written over the course of your life?
300, maybe.
And how many have you performed them all?
Not all of them have I performed, but a lot of them.
How do you make the choice of what you would perform and this one I'm not going to perform?
You know, That's difficult for me because as a songwriter, they're all my babies. Sometimes the ones that I don't think are that good are the ones that people gravitate to. So it's very strange, you know. Sometimes I think one's good and people don't seem to gravitate to that one. So I let the public decide.
What's that like when you perform or you let somebody hear a song and they say, well, you know, that's not my favorite?
You know what? It doesn't hurt my feelings really, because I know in my personal experience, I've had songs grow on me. Sometimes I hear a song once or twice, I don't really like it. It's not really getting me right there in the gut, but it grows on you. So some of my songs are like that. You know, people tell me that, hey, I didn't really care for that at first, but it's growing on me.
Have you ever had a song that you thought, well, this isn't going to go over very well, and then everybody loves it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that happens. That's, like I said, there's songs that are not necessarily my favorites that people seem to like more than I do.
What do you think the accounting for that is? Just audience taste?
It's the taste of the audience, and there's really no rhyme or reason in my eyes. I just don't really have a gauge for that. Like I said, most of my songs, they're all my babies. You know, I put effort into all of them, so it's hard for me to decide sometimes.
So when you are writing a song and you get it ready to perform, you really don't know if it's going to be a hit or not a hit.
Well, true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
That must be difficult.
Yeah. You never know. You never know.
What are your favorite types of songs to perform?
Once again, I'm kind of an old school country guy, so I gravitate towards what they used to call the crying in your beer songs, the ones that invoke emotion. That's what I like.
Country music seems to be synonymous with that in a way. There's a lot of emotion, a lot of songs about relationships, maybe more than other genres of music. Why do you think that is?
Well, there was a great songwriter in Nashville, Harlan Howard. He said that country music is three chords in the truth. Mm. And that says it all right there.
When we were talking before we went on air this morning, we were talking about the country music fan and their relationship to the artist being stronger than really any other genre. Why is that?
I wish I knew why that was, but I do think that country music artists make themselves accessible to their fans more so than maybe some other genres of music, and the fans respond to that, I think.
When you were deciding you wanted to perform music, how did you come to country rather than rock or pop or all the other areas you could go into?
As a young child, my family is from Southern Ohio, so when you're from Southern Ohio, every family reunion, every get-together, every holiday, the guys would break out their banjos, mandolins, and bluegrass music is just a way of life down there. So I just was gravitated towards that as a young child.
When you were young, who did you listen to?
I listen to rock, too. You know, I'm a big rock fan. Of course, I'm a little bit older, so I liked a lot of the 70s and 80s rock bands. So, yeah, I don't just listen to country music, but as far as country music when I was younger, big Hank Williams Jr. fan, big Waylon Jennings fan, the outlaw music was kind of something when I was a teenager that kind of made country cool, you know, so I gravitated towards that sound.
You know, certainly today, I think in country music, the names we've probably heard the most in the last year are, we certainly have heard Taylor Swift, there's no doubt about that. We certainly recently have heard a lot about Jason Aldean. Those are the names we hear.
Morgan Wallen sold out Sue twice.
Yes.
That was amazing.
Two nights in a row.
Yes.
Sold it out. What is it about those people? What do they have that they're leading the pack right now?
Boy, I wish I knew what their secret was, but to be honest with you, I think it all boils down to what we were talking about a minute ago, that people gravitate towards them because they seem to be accessible. They seem to be normal people. And the country fan, you know, they like that.
Somebody like Willie Nelson, at 90 years old, is still out there performing.
Still on the bus.
And people love to come see him. He draws big crowds. Other genres of music, that doesn't happen a whole lot. What is it? Is Willie Nelson right now the last living icon of country?
I would say yes, he's probably one of the last living true icons, yeah.
When he leaves us, and hopefully that's not for a while, who would step into his spot? Does it have to be a different generation?
Sometimes I believe that that's true. You know, country does evolve. You know, the pop country of today isn't the Merle Haggard sound of the early 70s. It's not the George Jones sound of the 60s. It does evolve.
You know, there were a heavy string of female country performers, Loretta Lynn, Reba McEntire, a lot of people of that nature, Martina McBride. And then it seemed to taper off. Now, we have Taylor Swift, but today they don't seem to be as front and center as the men. Is there any particular reason for that?
You know, I don't know the formula for that, but I do see within the last 2 years, a lot of female artists are in the top 40 now. You have people like Ashley McBride, Carly Pierce that I know. They're making a splash in country music right now. Gabby Barrett, Lauren Elena that was on Idol. You know, some of these people are starting to change that. But once again, it's like you said, it's kind of a cycle, you know. There'll be maybe a 10-year period where the male artist is more dominant. But right now, I do see a lot of good country music from the females.
You know, for a long time, it was records. That's what people went out and bought. And then we went to CDs, and now we're on things like Spotify. Now, you do have a CD, Chad Clark, It's About Time, but you also have a distributor that puts you out there on Spotify and other streaming platforms. How do people get music now? If they wanted a CD, how would they do that? If they just want to hear a cut, did it just go to Spotify?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what most people do. I have actual hard CDs. Most of the time I sell them at shows. People want them autographed, and I think they're taking them home and putting them on the shelf because I think most people stream music now. And you can buy my entire album on iTunes, you know, and download it right to your phone. So I think that we're going to see the death of CDs within the next 5 years, probably, because I can see that it's not one of the things that I really sell.
You know, what's interesting about CDs is when people bought them, they might listen to their favorite song. Usually people have a favorite song, but because they bought the CD, they would listen to the other 8 or 10 songs on the CD that maybe they would not have listened to. In the streaming world, they don't have to do that anymore. Is that a good or bad thing?
A little of both. You know, like you mentioned, you might have a hit off of a CD. People go out and buy the CD, and then they would realize that there was other good songs on there too. So now in the streaming world, your music might get overlooked. But I'm real fortunate with my CD because if you look at my numbers on Spotify, they're kind of even. So I wasn't even thinking about this, Scott, but a promoter out in Nashville actually pointed it out to me. That tells him, as a promoter, that when people listen to one of my songs, they're not stopping there and moving on. They're actually, hey, this guy's not too bad, and they're listening to all of my songs on the CD, so that's kind of nice.
When people go to a Chad Clark concert, what do they get?
They get some real country music, some country rock, and hopefully they get entertained and have fun.
Is it filled with all original tunes?
No, I do some covers, but I'm gravitating towards more original work now because I'm trying to establish myself as an original artist. But, you know, for 30 years, I was in bands around Marion, and all we did was cover tunes. So I still do a few covers.
What's it like to perform somebody else's music?
it's totally different than performing your own music, because you're copying that person. You know, you're trying to do justice to their style, to their song. I don't necessarily try to imitate people, because I can't do that. I do their music in my style, but yeah, you're trying to do their song justice. When you're doing your own music, it's a little different. It's coming from a different place inside of you.
You said imitate. Are you trying to do it like they did it, or do you give yourself any leeway to put your own little stamp on it?
Well, I try to give myself a little bit of leeway, because there are a lot of great songs, great performers out there that I can't imitate. I never did a lot of George Jones songs, because nobody sings like George, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying? So, but the songs I do cover, I kind of put my spin on it.
What's your favorite song to cover?
Oh, God, I couldn't pick one, but I'm a huge Waylon Jennings fan. I do a lot of Waylon Jennings songs. I like to do Merle Haggard, some of the classic stuff. That's more of my favorite stuff to do.
What was it about those guys, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, George Jones, what did they have? Because they certainly were different than other country artists.
Well, you just touched on it. Each one that you just named had a uniqueness about them. One of the deaths of a performer is if somebody comes up and say, hey, you sound exactly like Willie Nelson. Well, guess what? There is a Willie out there already. You don't want that. So you want your own sound.
How hard is it not to imitate somebody? Because when you're a fan of something, you listen to a lot of it, you see a lot of it, and when you're doing things like videos, I mean, you might subconsciously dress like them, move like them. It's hard.
You have to. I mean, you are influenced by your environment. That's my belief, you know. You try not to, but yeah, you are influenced by your environment. So the people that you like and you've seen him perform over the years on TV and stuff, I think a little bit of that pops out every now and then in me.
Have you ever realized, not realized while you were doing it, that you were doing a slight imitation of somebody, but when you saw it or heard it back, said, uh-oh,
yes,
I'm doing an imitation
yes.
here.
And it happens more on cover tunes than my own stuff, you know what I'm saying? My own stuff, I don't really have to think about the song and how it was originally done. So, yeah, it's more on cover tunes. You'll find yourself kind of imitating a little bit.
I recently became acquainted with Morgan Wallen's music because of this concert that happened in Columbus. And so many people I knew said they were going to this concert from Mary. And I kept thinking, well, who is this that they're all going to? Why did that have such an attraction in this area?
He is one of the young faces of country music that is a singer-songwriter. He has different styles of country music. Some of his music is a little bit young for me, I'm not going to lie, but then he'll put out another song that hits home with me. So he's one of those new performers that has a wide audience.
Is he going to be, I mean, not that he's not big already, but is he going to be huge, bigger than he is now?
I think so, because of his songwriting talents. I think that he's going to have longevity. You got a guy out there by the name of Chris Stapleton. What a unique voice he has. He kind of brought blues to country, you know, and that's something new, and he's just setting the world on fire, too.
You know something interesting here in Marion? Back in 2021, I believe it was, Colin Ray came with a group of other country artists. I believe it was Sammy Kershaw and Aaron Tippin. At the Palace. I went to that show, and it nearly sold out the Palace, if it didn't sell out.
Right.
1,400 seats. Now, less than 2 years later, Colin Ray's playing the Popcorn Festival. So I would guess that somebody who is no longer in the forefront of country music, but certainly was at one point, has the ability to play the same city twice within 3 years.
Yes.
Why is that?
Boy, I don't have a formula for that either, but I'll tell you, with Colin Ray, I mean, he hasn't had a hit probably in 5 years, and here he is still out there touring, still viable on the touring scene. So country music fans are loyal.
They'll go back. You know, it's different than a comedian. If you hear a comedian's joke, you hear it once, you laugh, that's it. A song, you can go back 1,000 times.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
And a lot of these people, like Colin Ray and people of that era, you know, they haven't had an original album out maybe in 5 to 10 years. I just seen John Anderson down at the People's Bank Theater in Marietta, which is similar to our Palace Theater, and he did an acoustic show down there in Marietta. Hasn't had any hits out for quite some time. Sold out the People's Bank Theater down there in Marietta. People love to hear the old hits, you know, and in country, I think it's more true than it's in some other genres.
Want to talk a little bit about Jason Aldean, not too much into the controversy that happened in the recent month, but if people were not paying attention, it would be hard not to pay attention to that controversy. Jason Aldean released a song, and people felt that there were some overtones. Now, draw into it what overtones they were into this particular song, but CMT did pull it, but he played, the weekend that this controversy hit a fever pitch, he played, I believe, in Cincinnati here in Ohio,
yes,
and sold out, and
absolutely
did not apologize.
And performed that song.
And performed that song. And I think it's done well by him. I think it got that song more attention. Small Town, is that what it was?
Try This in a Small Town,
yeah.
That in a small town.
What did you make of that controversy? I mean, CMT thought enough of it to pull the song. It certainly was mainstream news.
You know, I had heard the recording maybe a month before the video was released, and that's when the controversy hit, was when he released the video. And apparently he used a courthouse in Columbia, Tennessee that had some racial overtones, and they tried to place that video into the lyrics of the song. That wasn't necessarily what they were going for. Jason didn't write the song. He just performed it, to be frank about it. So I think that there was more read into it than what there actually was.
Were you surprised at how big that got? For 4 or 5 days, it was talked about on national news,
yes,
big news shows. And I thought, wow.
Well, I think, you know, once again, they were trying to make it a racial thing, and I don't think it was at all. I think that some guys just had a feeling about certain things that were going on in today's world, you know, wouldn't happen in a small town. That's the gist of the song, but I think it was blown out of proportion myself.
Now, Chad Clark is the guest today. His CD is It's About Time. You can get cuts of that CD in a lot of places. Spotify, obviously. iTunes is out there. It won't be hard to find, let's put it that way. And a music video filmed right here in Marion at the Shovel City Drinkery, One Fifth at a Time is the tune. Now, Chad is going to do some live songs for us here in the studio this morning. How did you pick the songs you're going to do here for us this morning?
I just tried to think of songs that would be good, me by myself, acoustically, without the band.
Now, are there songs that, what about a song lends it more to that than another song?
For me, it tends to be like some of the upbeat songs that you need the drums, you need the bass, you know, the lead guitar. These are more ballad-type songs that I'm going to do today.
We've got about 10 minutes left this hour if you want to do the first one here of the songs you're going to perform. But Chad is going to stay with us. He's going to be back with us next hour, and we are going to have more songs, and we're going to talk more about his background coming from New Bloomington here in Ohio and how you can get his music. So we have a lot more going on in the next hour, so don't tune away. We are going to take a break here at the top of the hour for 15 minutes, but we've got more Chad Clark until 10 o'clock this morning here on WGH Talk. Chad, what song are we going to hear?
This is an unreleased song called Julie, and I recently just sat down in a room by myself and did a little video of this and put it on TikTok, and got 25,000 hits, so this might be on my next CD, I guess.
Here we go. Julie Chad Clark here on WGH Talk.
Lines on her arms match the lines on her face. The darkness in her eyes that time can't erase. She lived each day, a week at a time. She took everything I had and she left me behind. Fell in love with her at the end of May. Thought she loved me too, that's all I could say. What she loved more was a needle and a spoon. She left me crying that fall under a harvest moon. I said, Julie, oh, Julie, open up your eyes, tell me it's alright. I said, Julie, oh, Julie, open up your eyes, love me one more night. It was late October on the edge of town. You could see your breath when we laid her down. I could hear her laugh as I dropped that rose. Did she find her peace? Only God knows. I said, Julie, oh, Julie, open up your eyes, tell me it's alright. I said, Julie, oh, Julie, open up your eyes, love me one more night. Oh, Julie, open up your eyes, tell me it's alright. I said, Julie, oh, Julie, open up your eyes, love me one more night.
Way to go, Chad Clark here on WGH Talk. Julie was the song. And again, Chad's CD out last November. It's About Time. 3.3 million streams on Spotify and video. Recently filmed right here at the Shovel City Drinkery in Marion. One fifth at a time. What's the story behind Julie? Is there a Julie?
There is no Julie. I've got some other songs out there. I got a song called Sad Songs. It's about your father dying and my dad's still alive and kicking. So I took some artistic liberties with that one.
For somebody who was listening to that, I think we can ascertain what that song's about. What would you say the song's about?
I would say the song's about addiction and losing somebody close to you with an addiction.
Where did that song come from in your mind, beginning to performance.
I think that in today's world, unfortunately, we're living in that, and there's a lot of people that can relate to that.
Mm. It, you know, that has become such a huge thing, addiction, the world we live in. But I don't know that people would write songs about it years ago, but now they do. Is there anything off-topic, off-limits when writing a song?
You know, I would say the major labels in Nashville probably wouldn't like Julie. They would think that that's a little bit controversial. They like to be vanilla. You know, they don't like to be right, left. They like to be right there in the middle. So, yeah, before today's world, that probably wouldn't get released. But in today's world, with all the independent outlets, you're hearing more music like that.
Hmm. Is there anything you personally would not write a song about?
Not really, to be honest with you. I like to make it real. Hmm. You know, I like to stir emotions, whether it be good or bad. I think that's country music. Hmm.
Who in your career is the most talented person you have worked with?
Oh, that's a toughie. I've opened up for a lot of national acts that are extremely talented. I gravitate towards the singer-songwriters, though, the guys that actually do the writing and singing of their own music. Not all performers out there are like that, Jason Aldean being one of them. He sings a lot of songs that people write for him. Not that he's not a great performer. Tim McGraw. He doesn't write a lot of his own music. Great performer. But I gravitate towards the singer-songwriters.
Being a singer-songwriter yourself, do you think it matters when you write the song other than being given a piece of music?
That's a tough question. Yeah, I do. I think it does matter. But
they can still be hits, though.
They can still be hits, but there are songs that touch me that probably are never going to be a hit.
Now, what do you mean by that?
What I mean by that, it's got some inner feelings, that some meaning that might not mean the same to somebody else, but it does touch home with me.
What would you say most of your songs tend to be about?
Losing love, drinking, typical country type genres of themes.
Now, is there a reason particularly for you that losing love, drinking are the songs that you write and gravitate toward?
Only, like I said before, I try to just make it real. Try to make it real. That something that people can relate to. And most people's had heartache in their life, so that's something that somebody can relate to. People's lost loved ones. I've written a lot of songs about that. And that's what I try to do. I try to stir emotion.
Does the emotion have to come from you? Do you have to have experienced those things? Now, obviously, we've all lost somebody. We've probably all had a bad relationship along the way. We not all necessarily haven't had drinking issues or drinking problems. Do you have to experience it for it to be in a song?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. You have to observe it. You don't have to personally go through it. But, yeah, I write a lot of songs and take some liberties, you know, and people think, wow, you know, that happened to you. And I'm like, no, that didn't happen to me. But
you have to explain that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting.
But I think you got to be an observer. And I think that's one thing that some of your great songwriters will tell you, like Kris Kristofferson. I can go down the list, Bob Dylan. These guys have observed things around them, and then they write about it.
Mm. Chad Clark is the guest this morning. The CD is It's About Time. What is the best way for people to get your music? What do they need to do?
Well, I do have a website that will point them into the right direction. If you go to www.chadclark.hearnow, that's H-E-A-R, now.com, that'll get you links to all of the major streaming services, and it's got clips of some of my songs, too.
Hmm. And the video is available?
The video is not yet.
Not of it, just there are some clips of it out there.
Yeah, there's some clips, but No, it's not edited yet, but we should have it available within like a week or so.
The clips that are out there, were you happy to put those out there, to see those out there, the clips of the video?
The director wasn't. He didn't want anything leaked. But I sent them out to a few people that were involved and stuff to let them see what we're going for. But no, the final product's not out there yet. The director wants to be able to do his final edit before we actually release it.
And when it's released, how can people view that?
We're going to blast it on social media right now. Like I said, I don't have a record label, so we're not going to be seeing it on CMT soon, but hopefully one day. But
you never know.
Never know. Right off the bat, though, it'll be on YouTube, Facebook, those type of outlets.
Oh, very
social
nice.
Media.
Very nice. Chad Clark is the guest. The CD again, It's About Time. And we're going to take a little break here, come back a whole nother hour with Chad, and more music and more background right after this. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Marlo Thomas, I said. Marlo has the money, and Marla is after it.
When is it, do you regret not